Okay, this is the hour we're going to take your phone calls and comments with Alfred at Ask as we talk about all these various issues that affect all of us in one way or another. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Alfred, what would I call you title-wise? Radio host? Blogger?
Political activist.
Political activist?
Yeah.
Okay, that's fair enough. Fair enough indeed. All right, let's take some calls. You ready?
I'm ready.
All right, let's go to Walnut Creek, California. Peter, you'll get us started on Coast to Coast. Go ahead, Peter.
Hey, I wanted to ask your guest if he's familiar with the SEDM.org website, SovereignTreatyEducationDefenseMinistry.org.
I'm superficially. I've been there a few times, but I see so much stuff I can barely remember what I saw 3-4 days ago.
Yeah, I've been there.
Thank you.
Okay, very good, Peter. Lots of websites out there. Lots of them indeed. Some beneficial, some not so good, Alfred, huh?
Yeah, I understand. That's half the trying to sort between the wheat and the chaff. That's pretty challenging.
What kind of feedback do you generally get from people?
I get positive feedback. I mean, the people within my niche, all right? I have very little criticism and a great deal of, you know, compliments and or, you know, perhaps corrections. They say, well, I see what you're saying there, but I think that's this, that, or the other. We get into dialogues and so on, but...
Would you call yourself a nice guy?
I would call myself a persistent son of a...
Pain in the neck, right?
Yeah, something like that. I mean, I'm not a bad man and the rest of that. I'm not out to do violence and so on.
You wouldn't hurt
But him. I am out to rectify a certain amount of injustice that I think I've seen.
I mean, were you the kind of guy somebody want to buy a beer for?
Not anymore.
What do you mean?
Well, I was an alcoholic for 12 years.
Oh, no.
I haven't had a drink for 33, 34 years.
You don't want
like
that.
I mean, you couldn't buy me a drink with a 45.
Only I would ask a question like that to a former alcoholic.
It doesn't bother me.
Let's go to Woody in Phoenix, Arizona, west of the Rockies. Go ahead, Woody.
Yes, first-time caller. I love your show, George.
Thanks, Woody.
Got friends that listen. And also, I was living in Las Vegas in the 1990s, and there was a really, really heavy sovereignty. I, like you said, it's not really a movement. It's just people caring about what the laws are, and I've experienced a lot of that. My main question is that there are a lot of people that have actually, and I know a few of them personally, that have done things like, oh, they fight the IRS in court. They win.
Some people do. That's true.
Yes. And they stamp their cases not to be cited. In other words, they can't use these victories as precedent for some reason in a court of law when they've clearly established that there's a problem.
And then you have some like the Browns who lose.
Right. And the losses are treated as the precedent and the and the gains. In other words, they arbitrarily get to decide which particular cases apply to future decisions without actually having everything being counted as case law.
That's pretty much true, and it's even deeper than that. The number of victories are relatively few. There's some, but they're relatively few. But, I mean, the ones that go to court and win, relatively few. But there are a significant number of cases that are dismissed. They're just dropped before they ever get to court. There are some people that are smart enough, they put up a significant defense, and the IRS just drops the case. That's all. And there's never a record of a win or a loss. If they think you're strong enough, sometimes they'll drop the case. It's not big numbers, but it's part of the reason you don't see, this is not just crazy talk. There are people who are succeeding.
Alfred, do you love this country?
Sure do. If I didn't, I wouldn't do this. This isn't about hating the country, not by any stretch of the imagination. And I will bet you that anyone you can, just about, I mean, there's always some nutcases in any movement you care to identify.
That's true.
All right. I don't care if you're supporting a particular football team or if you're supporting the Republicans or the Democrats. Everybody's got a certain percentage of wackos.
There's always an obsession somewhere.
Absolutely. But the vast majority of the people that are in what has now been labeled the sovereignty movement, the people that are, you know, they have an affinity, they are motivated by a love of this country. And they are concerned that they see things that are bad happening in this country, and they're trying to do the best they can to rectify that. And the big problem is when they try to present it to the government just says, no, 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 we don't have to listen to you. Go away. You're crazy. You're extremist. We don't have to hear you.
If you were at a sovereignty meeting and some guy's sitting next to you and he goes, yeah, tomorrow, Alfred, I'm going to take my assault weapon and go take those guys out, what would you do?
Well, I'd tell him that's stupid, point one. I would discourage him from doing it.
Would you turn him in?
It's the sort of thing that has never come up. Would I turn him in? I don't know. I'd have to. Chances are,
I might.
That would be a tough situation.
I might, in case he was right.
It's one of those things where you'd have to kind of assess what's going on. Are you just talking to some nutcase? And I mean by nutcase, somebody just jabbering. Or is this guy serious? I don't know. I think you have to. It's a very difficult question, but it goes to the idea: are we going to start snitching on everybody in our community? And to some degree, the government is encouraging that.
Well,
now.
But I don't. I wouldn't call that a snitch if somebody's actually threatening to harm somebody.
You know, I hear a lot of talk. I mean, you know, talk.
Well, yeah, but what if? But what if on the one day you say, I'm not going to do anything about it because talk is cheap, and this guy goes out and does something, you'd feel bad, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I understand. I mean, you're posing a very difficult situation. It's something that all I can tell you from my first response is I just hope it never happens, and it hasn't in 28 years, and I don't expect it to happen.
Yeah, but people are at the end of their rope now.
Well, you know, you mentioned this earlier, and in fact, I talked about this today on a little radio program I also do. The problem that's happening right now, in my opinion, is that the country has moved from merely being frustrated and irritated and annoyed to the point where I think a significant number of people don't like the government. They are now caught in a situation where we're going through something like a divorce, where the two parties aren't going to believe anything the other one says. It's like me and my first wife and the rest of that sort of thing. We can sit back and yell and scream. I don't care what she said. I wasn't going to believe it. Anything I said, she wasn't going to believe it. We're kind of getting that point in this country.
But as ticked off as you were, Alfred, you didn't go and kill her.
No, I didn't.
And we've seen cases during divorces, for example, where the woman gets killed and maybe her kids get killed and the guy gets convicted of it because he was upset.
I know. You can lose your mind. I mean, this court system can drive you right out of your mind. I don't doubt it's one of the principal causes of mental illness in this country.
Let's go to Jennifer in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Jennifer, go ahead.
Good morning.
Morning.
Yes, I had a question. You had mentioned divorce and how you lost your children because of the woman, et cetera. Well, I have my husband has, his ex-wife, and the children are used as bait. And when he goes to pay, you know, he pays his child support all the time. But if she doesn't get it on time or if she just doesn't feel like it, then we can't speak to the children because of her agenda.
And that's wrong.
And so, you know, it's a waiting game. You know, we have to wait for her call every 2 weeks. And when she doesn't call, then there we are depressed. And, you know, and her agenda is just because she wants her husband now to adopt the kids. And she doesn't want the children to know their father. So my question is, you had mentioned, you know, this happening to you. What is, do you know, is there anything out there that we can do besides, you know, because the courts just, it's true, you know, they don't want to listen to a father.
Is there anything you can do? I'll tell you, the solution to the problem is actually pretty simple. Don't have the problem. All right. That's the solution to the problem. Don't have the problem. Other than that, I don't know of any solution. I mean, it's one of these things that, you know, in my own case, my 15 years after the divorce, my ex-wife explained to me why she wouldn't let me see the kids. It was because she knew that she and her attorney had railroaded me in the divorce case. And she was scared to death that if she let me take the kids on the weekend, I'd pack up my bags and take the kids and disappear to another state.
Would you have?
No, I wouldn't. I was just stupid. What would I do? Go wash dishes or something? Hide out in the... You know, I wasn't dumb enough to do that.
Well, that's
she was
also,
scared to death I was going.
Well, it's also
and
considered...
And therefore, I couldn't see my children.
Hey, it's also considered kidnapping, isn't it?
I don't know if I had custody. I don't know if that's true or not.
Well,
but regardless,
not if you have custody.
You know, it's just... People go nuts in these circumstances.
Next up, let's go to San Marcos, California. Brian, you're up on Coast to Coast. Hello, Brian.
Oh, hi, George.
Good
hi,
to
Albert. Yeah, I just, you know, in the beginning, Alfred was expressing that the sovereignty movement is just kind of haphazard and everything. But I just want everybody to know that it's huge. The sovereignty movement is massive. republicfortheunitedstates.org. Again, that's republicfortheunitedstates.org. Explains, they already have a president, vice president, cabinet, Congress, Senate, superior courts, governors for each state. I mean, it's massive. It's ready. It's in place. It's ready to step in as soon as the bankruptcy goes through. As soon as, and even FBI agents, and get this, even the chief of staff are all for it. And the FBI agents and the different agents at different agencies have approached all these people, and after talking to them, they have said, you know what? You guys are right. And because they're doing it legally. They're doing it legally.
And that's the smart way to do it. These are Americans who have views that most of us have, and that is to just tell the truth.
Yeah.
Simple as that.
It's incredible. And they're getting back to the original, the organic Constitution, not what was taken away from us in 1870, the Act of 1871.
How do they feel, Brian, about nonviolence?
Oh, 100% nonviolence. 100%. They don't want to even hear the word violence.
All right, good.
It's not necessary if you do it. It's all there in the papers. I can't remember if the Declaration of Independence, I believe it is. If your government gets out of hand, I can't remember the exact words, you are legally bound to be able to take over. And it's all legal. It's all legal.
All right. But, well, thanks. And yeah. What's your reaction to that, Alfred?
Well, it's all legal. I mean, if we could get this done by merely being legal, nobody would know my name. Because the legality of all of this, you can't just walk up to the existing government and say, look, I have a paper, I have an argument, I have legal precedent, and therefore you need to do the right thing.
Or you're out and I'm in.
Yeah. That ain't going to happen. No. Power surrenders nothing. All right. I mean, it's an interesting idea that we're going to be able to do this with just paperwork, but it will be something where the Christ will be here among us before that happens. The government isn't going to give this up peacefully, or at least they've shown no indication to do so far. They have to maintain their record.
So you think they're prepared to do whatever they have to do to stay in power? And when I'm not talking about any political party. I'm talking about the theory of staying in power.
I'd say that's roughly correct. I don't see any evidence to the contrary.
Next up, let's go to Cornelius, Alexandria, Louisiana. It's you.
Hey, George and Alfred.
Hi.
God bless both of y'all and Tommy, your call screener. I was just talking to Tommy. I said, Mr. Alfred and George, we'd like to have y'all in the Tea Party. And I tell you what, y'all need to have Glenn Beck on, too. I think, you know, Alfred, you're on the right track. And George, he's just trying to get you on a track that's right, too. As long as you're nonviolent and, you know, let the government try to do the violent.
I agree. And that's, I mean, the government tries to paint you with the brush and say, oh, you're violent, you're an extremist. No, I'm not. I've got a dozen dictionaries. You understand? That's not a hallmark of a violent man. What I do is read and write. And that's why people are talking to me. I've done it for 28 years. I've figured out a few things. I've had some peculiar successes.
How frustrating do you think people are right now?
Oh, I think it's getting bigger, and I think it's getting deeper. And it's nowhere near the end of it. But I think it's changed, where people just don't like the government before. They used to be just frustrated with it. It's beyond that. It's like a divorce where you just can't stand to be in the same room with that other party.
You think they've like thrown their hands in the air and they've given up?
I don't know if they've given up. I think a lot of them are finally saying, okay, this is enough of this stuff. I mean, this is where it's getting dangerous, and it's not dangerous because people like myself are advocating violence. It's dangerous because government says there's no reason to listen to these people.
Are these religious people?
Oh, absolutely. A lot of them are.
God-fearing?
The foundation for the sovereignty movement is God. This whole notion.
But they're not fanatical. They're not fanatics about it, are they?
No, I wouldn't say fanatics, but, you know, it depends. Give me 10 people, and I can probably find a fanatic out of the 10. I can find someone who is more dedicated to the idea than they are to the understanding. You know, there's a lot of people who claim to be sovereigns and they don't know how to spell the word.
As long as they don't wake me up at 8 in the morning with pamphlets on a Saturday.
Nobody does. Who does pamphlets anymore? I mean, you got the internet.
No, that's true, too. Let's go to Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. Selena, you're on Coast to Coast on the Wild Card Line. Hi.
Hi. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning.
I had a comment and then a question. The comment is, it seems like what a lot of us are getting angry about is just basic corruption in the government, you know, on all levels, groups and individuals. And I include in that people, government workers who refuse to do the jobs they're supposed to, but continue to collect the paychecks every week. I find that very corrupt. My question is, I was wondering if you guys heard about this particular incident a few months ago when the question about Libya and whether Obama had the authority to
bomb.
Go in.
Right.
Right. The Obama administration responded by saying they don't have to abide by the Constitution because they are following United Nations protocol. And I only heard that in a little obscure commentary that should have been front page news. You know, that's pretty treasonous.
Well, I'm not sure they said it directly like that, but I do believe that they believe that NATO takes precedent and that we're doing this through NATO. And that's the part of the problem through all this, Alfred. And thanks, Selena, for your call. Nobody trusts anybody anymore, do they?
No, I don't think so. I think it's broken down. And this is part of the business with the dollar, for example. The whole idea that makes the dollar valuable goes to confidence in that dollar. I think every time they tell a lie, they diminish confidence in the dollar. And as they do, the value of the dollar should continue to drop as a function of corruption and lies.
I think a president must go to Congress and should go to Congress if he's going to bomb any kind of a country. And, you know, the fact that this is being done this way, you know, without approval first is abominable.
I agree.
You know,
I agree.
For any president.
I agree. You know. It isn't just about Obama, for example. I mean, Bush. I supported Bush when he was first elected and before he was done. I mean, I was about 2 years into his administration
before
I began to realize.
Do you think he lied to us about weapons of mass destruction, or he was lied to about weapons of mass destruction?
Well, I don't care who was lied to who, but there comes a point where the truth becomes obvious and there are no weapons of mass destruction. And at that point in time, anybody who's decent, honorable, whatever, says, oh, man, we made a big mistake.
Yeah, would have said, I've been lied to, folks. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. I just happen to think I know who told him, and he believed it hook, line, and sinker. Alfred, stay with us. We're going to come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM and take final phone calls with you as we talk about you, your government, and the truth on Coast to Coast AM. Next couple of Fridays, going to whittle off a couple of vacation days, so Ian Punnett will sit in for me tomorrow and the following Friday. I, of course, will be back on Monday on Coast to Coast AM, and I'll be back in just a moment with final phone calls on Coast to Coast AM. Alfred, do you think there's any gold at Fort Knox, or is it all gone?
I don't know. If there's anything there, there may be some tungsten. I don't know if they've got any gold or not.
I know. There are some people who actually think it's empty.
Well, you know, it's just another one of those. It's very simple as a resolve. Open the door, let some people walk in and find out what's really there.
Hey, here's a question about kings and queens. Royalty?
Yep.
Why do they wear crowns?
It is intended to emulate the corona that you saw around the head of the Christ or the saints in medieval paintings. The reason they became king or queen is they went through a coronation ceremony. And it's at that point where they are endowed by their creator, by God, with their divine right of kings. They became kings. They became sovereigns because they received their rights directly from God. And everyone else in the country was a subject because they did not get their rights directly from God. Only the king had the divine right of kings. And because he got it from God, that's what made him sovereign.
He got it from God. He thinks he got it from God, right?
Well, that was the premise that they operated on in the Holy Roman Empire, and then later when England broke off, that was the same premise. And in our country, They did something that was just extraordinary and virtually unprecedented in our Declaration of Independence when they said, we hold these truths to be self-evident that all men are created equal. They meant all men, including kings, that they are all, including kings, endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among these are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. When they said all men get their rights directly from God, they elevated all men to the status of sovereigns. This is the foundation for the concept. Chisholm versus Georgia, a case in 1793, the Supreme Court of the United States declared that the people were sovereigns without subjects.
Do they think they're godlike?
No, they think they are endowed by yes, in this regard, they think that they, in my opinion, they should think, consistent with Genesis 1, 26 through 28, on the sixth day God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals. In that regard, we are supposed to be in the image of God, and insofar as that's true, we are godlike.
If we start seeing a change in government for the better, What will that be? What will we be able to see so we'll know something's happening?
Well, we might see a government that recognizes there are some limits, that might actually start to voluntarily reduce its size, that might stop intruding into our lives in ways that are unreasonable and perhaps absurd.
Fix the tax problem?
Yeah, there'd be a bunch of things they could do, but I mean, it's, you know...
I've advocated legalizing drugs and then controlling it through clinics and things because the war on drugs is not working.
Let me tell you a story.
All right.
I was sued by the Attorney General of the state of Texas in 2006. I was added as a defendant. There were already six defendants. I was added as the seventh.
God, you're always in court.
No, I'm not, but I get there once in a while.
All right.
Okay? In fact, in this case, I basically almost didn't get to court, as it turns out. I was sued by the Attorney General of the state of Texas, as were the other six defendants in this case, for the manufacture and distribution of a controlled substance.
What was that?
This was not marijuana or cocaine or methamphetamine. It was colloidal silver. I was fiduciary for a trust that was involved in the manufacture and distribution of colloidal silver.
That's an immune booster.
It's an antibiotic, essentially, is what it is. It's an inexpensive antibiotic that's made with distilled water and silver ions.
Right.
That's what it comes down to. The FDA ordered the Texas Attorney General to file suit on us, and they did. The suit started in 2001, long before I got there. I wasn't added till 2006. I read the relevant law, which involves drugs.
Why'd they throw you in the suit?
Because I volunteered to be fiduciary for a trust. I didn't expect I did it because... It would give me. The people asked me if I would assist in this particular case.
The trust was tied into this company.
Yeah, the trust leased about $2,000 worth of equipment
to a
corporation that was involved in the manufacture. And based on that, the trust was a defendant. And when I volunteered to be fiduciary, they made me a defendant. Now each defendant is being threatened with fines of $25,000 per day. That's $9 million a year. In theory, I could have been clipped for about $20 million on this deal.
No, just write a check.
Pardon me?
Just write a check.
Yeah, right. Yeah, easy to write it. Let's see if you can cash it. I read the relevant law, and what I discovered is that the drug laws are based on the premise that the people are animals. All right? And this is exactly what it says in the law. This isn't nonsense. For example, you've got a copy of it right here.
This is in Texas.
Texas? The federal law, the Texas law,
right.
We've looked in five other states where we found the same thing. We found 23 separate instances of state and federal law that applied in our case where they used the words, I'm looking at it right now, here's Texas Health and Safety Code 431.002, subsection 14, and it defines drug. And it says drug means articles designed or intended for the use in the diagnosis, cure, mitigation, treatment or prevention of disease in man or other animals, other than food, intended to affect the structure of any function in the body of man or other animals.
So
first time I saw it, I thought
they're saying
crazy.
We're an animal.
Yeah. This is an absolute violation of that principle we find in Genesis 1, 26 through 28. It says, on the sixth day, God created man in his image and gave man dominion over the animals. As a Jew, as a Christian, and probably even as a Muslim, you can't declare me to be an animal without violating my freedom of religion. I drafted a freedom of religion defense on this. We put it back to the Attorney General. They went dead silent for 5 months. They came back after 5 months. They spent 5 months trying to negotiate a settlement with us, and then they just dropped the case.
Unbelievable.
They'd invested 6 years and nearly $500,000 in this case.
Unbelievable.
Yeah. But this is one of those things where the victory is not recorded. See, and the great significance of this is that because the drug is defined to presumes that the people are animals, that definition of drugs underlies the war on drugs. The whole war on drugs is based on the presumption that the people are animals. The war on drugs laid the foundation for much of the modern police state.
The police state
gave us the prison industrial complex. And all of this is balanced on a definition of drugs that presumes the people to be animals in violation of fundamental principles of the Bible.
And it creates the single largest money laundering scheme ever.
The reason they had to drop this case is if they would take us into court and give us an opportunity to explain it to a jury, we could have taken down the drug war. We could take down the police state or take a big bite out of it. We could take down a big chunk out of the prisons. There's something like 70% of the people in federal pen are there on drug-related crimes.
Petty drug-related crimes,
yeah.
By the way.
Yeah.
You know, and one of my reasons for legalizing it is most crimes of robbery, for example, are people who are trying to get money so they can go buy drugs.
I understand.
If they can go into some clinic and get it for cheap or free,
yeah,
they're not going to rob someone.
Do you know what the principal addictive ingredient is in all drugs?
What?
Cash.
Yeah. Okay.
It's the money you can make. Not just people don't get addicted just because it's fun to get high. They get addicted to the cash. It's the idea of selling these to somebody else. You can make money. That is the driving force. And the reason drugs are so profitable is because they've been declared to be illegal.
And you know, the bottom line here, too, Alfred, is if it's legal, people who aren't going to use drugs aren't going to use drugs anyway. People who are going to use drugs they're going to find it one way or another. Let's go to the phones. We'll wrap it up by going to Joe in Springfield, Illinois. Go ahead, Joe.
Hi, Alfred and George.
Hi.
I had a two-part question. My first part is, Alfred, how did you get out of jail in Missouri after the 344 days?
They finally just let me out. I was scheduled finally for a probable cause hearing. They brought me over to the courthouse. They sent in a public defender, and he said, I'm going to be your attorney. I said, no, you're not. I'm not having any attorney. I knew that's dangerous, and we won't have time to explain it, but I didn't want an attorney. He says, oh, yes, I am. We get into screaming contest. Okay?
Oh, wow.
He says, I'm going to be your attorney. No, you're not. He leaves and goes back into the courtroom. I'm in a jail cell outside the courtroom. He comes back a few minutes later, and he says, we've got a problem. The prosecutor can't find the paperwork. And therefore, the judge is prepared to release you right now on your own recognizance. All you have to do is just sign a little bond, and he'll turn you loose. I said, I'm not signing any bond because I know it gives you guys jurisdiction. Well, we do a dance on that. He finally leaves. I'm hollering. I'm going to sue him for malpractice. He's saying, I'm not afraid of you. He comes back about 3-4 minutes later, and he says, Mr. Addis, the judge has dismissed the case against you, and you're free to go.
Go.
Oh, wow.
Unbelievable.
Well, they
held me for 344 days, and they wouldn't even give me a probable cause hearing. The judge wouldn't let me in the courtroom.
I have a friend. It's kind of a similar situation, but he actually did commit a crime. He was a sex offender, and he pled guilty to it. But after I get parole and probation mixed up, but he was on, I think, parole, and they did a lie detector test on him. You know, he's got his life settled, and he had a job and apartment and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And they just come and did a lie detector test on him. He failed the lie detector. They throw him back in jail. And now he's actually served his time, but there's one out of six doctors that say he can't be released. And now he just got to wait for another court date. And then he's waiting just in a prison, just sitting there in the prison, you know.
Yeah.
And he did his time. And then as he's doing his time, then they turn around and say, oh, you missed your group meetings. So now he's violated his probation.
Because he was in jail.
Yes.
I saw a black guy that was in the jail when I first arrived. And he got out within a relatively short period of time. He was only in for a couple of days. And they turned him loose, and he cut some deal. He took a plea bargain. And before I was released, he had been caught violating his plea bargain. All right.
Well, they brought him
the terms
back,
of his plea bargain is he couldn't get drunk. And he went to his grandmother's birthday and he had some wine and they got him. They put him away. I don't remember. I mean, it was like 5-8 years he was going to do.
Wow.
Jeez. Well, let me ask you, if I can, Joe, about your friend. Is he got a problem, do you think?
I honestly think he did his time, and I think he's... As a friend, I would step by him and make sure everything I can do, you know, that it won't happen again, you know. But I don't think he has a problem. I think he's. I don't know if he can ever be cured, but you know, as far as he was doing all the steps that the court told him to do.
Right. That's a tough case. That's probably one of the toughest cases of anything.
And I understand from like, you know, they're going to make laws, you know, to protect everybody and everything, but. At the same time, you know, in this situation, I know he did his time.
The doctors
are more in charge than anybody in the case.
Sadly, if I had kids, I wouldn't want to live next to him. And
right.
and that's, you know, right or wrong, that's the way I feel.
Right.
You know. Okay, thanks, Joe.
Okay.
Appreciate you being on the program. Next up, let's go to New York. Anita's turn on Coast to Coast. Hi, Anita.
Yes. Hey, excellent show, George.
Thanks.
And Alfred, I really appreciate your work. I want to make a brief comment and tie it into my question, and I'll listen over the air.
Sure.
First of all, it seems that we're dealing with very, very, very clever, diabolical genius type people. The bread and circuses that they put before the sovereigns seem to have, as Charlotte Isabey would say, the complete dumbing down of America. But I want to tie this into his thoughts and what we can do around TSA. How it is that Homeland Security, which seemed to be modeled on what Hitler did, gave us TSA, and how they can actually humiliate, scorn, and crush the citizen, the sovereign, to such an extent that most of the people don't even seem to know that this could be no means of protection. So I'd like to hear your ideas around how we take down sexually assaulting and microwaving, you know, giving people cancer, you know, just trying to go to the airport. Now listen over the air, and thank you.
Well, The reason they're able to do that and treat people the way they do is because they don't presume that you are sovereign. This country started out with that presumption. It was the basic, it was the foundation for liberty, for American exceptionalism, for limited government. It all traces to individual sovereignty. They have moved us into a situation where they presume us to be subjects. As such,
that's right. We're there to serve. They think we're there to serve government.
That's exactly right.
You know,
and the solution on this is you have to educate yourself. It's the first order of business. You must educate yourself to where you begin to understand the concepts, and then you can begin to effectively resist. You can talk to other people and say, look, this is wrong, and I think we should stop this.
Rick is in Tickfaw, Louisiana, east of the Rockies. Hey, Rick, go ahead.
Okay, George. Hello, Mr. Alfred.
Hi there.
I have a question and an opinion. Can I ask my question first and then give my...
Yeah, time permitting. Go ahead.
Okay, if our country becomes a socialist state or country, say a screenwriter writes a movie or something,
mm-hmm.
all right, and then he makes all that money, like $2 million or whatever, in the first weekend.
All right.
What happens to all that money? Does the state take it and then give him what they believe he deserves?
Is he an independent film producer?
I'm just making I'm asking the question. If he makes a bunch of money in a weekend, where does that money go? To the state?
No, he'll keep it. I mean, he'll pay some taxes on it, of course, but he'll get most of his profits after he pays his bills.
I'm kind of worried about all that because I'm a writer myself, and I'm like sitting on my ideas because I don't want to get involved in a state, a socialist state.
Well, anyway, you're already in one, that's for sure.
My opinion is a little earlier you said that that Barack Obama got elected and he changed his mind.
Oh, no, he just never did what he said he was going to do.
Well, what I think is he lied to get elected.
Well, a lot of people think that, too. I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, but I think, when politicians get elected, they say one thing, and then they say something else. You know how you can tell a politician? Their mouths are moving.
Yeah.
All right, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
You got it. Okay. You got it. Samantha in Oracle, Arizona. We'll get you in real fast. Go ahead.
Yeah, I didn't think you'd get to me. I was just thinking about today, and I had a lady on Facebook who was talking about what's happening right now. And I said to her, you know, I used to be angry with the government, but it's not them anymore that I'm really angry with. It's really the American people. I wish that we would get together and just do something nonviolent but real instead of talking or laying down and just taking everything they dish out. You know what they say. We gave them an inch years ago. Now look what they've done to our country. And no one seems angry enough to do anything yet.
It would be funny on election night if nobody voted at all.
Well, see, why can't... That's my question. Why can't we do something?
I think the first order of business is you got to educate yourself to where you understand you are doing something that's right. It's not enough just to be sit back and say, I'm frustrated and I'm mad as hell and I'm not going to take it anymore. You've got to actually figure out what is the right thing to do, and that requires a certain amount of study and self-education. And you do that, and you begin to achieve a kind of moral foundation for your action. You can help other people. When enough people reach that moral foundation, you can act in concert, and perhaps you can achieve things without resorting to violence.
All right, Alfred, thank you. Massage a little bit your comment on the Second Amendment and government officials, and let me tell you something, you're going to go far.
Well, I hope, I don't know how far I'm going to go, but I certainly appreciate being on your program. And I'll say one thing before we leave. The people coming to my blog from your program are way more than I got off 60 Minutes.
Well, this is a huge radio show. Alfred, thank you so much. We appreciate your comments. And truly, you massage your Second Amendment discussion a little bit, it's going to take you even farther than you are. More people will listen to you, believe me. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Ross Mitchell, Ian Punnett, George Knapp, Hart Bell, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.